Good evening. This is Matakue Oyasi, brought to you by the Matakue Oyasi Collective. I'm Jim Craven. My Blackfoot name is Omakokia Ipui.
Dean Looking Hawk.
And Louis Soa. And we'd like to thank all you that supported us in the recent membership drive. We did very well, thanks to you all.
Thank you so much. It means a lot to us. And tonight's going to be a call-in show. Please call in, area code 503-231-8187. That's area code 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd also like to hear what you'd like to talk about tonight as well.
And our opening song was by Celeste Estara. She was a guest on our show here about a month or so ago, and she just released her CD, brought us a copy down to KBOO to put in our collection, so anybody can request that song.
Thank you so much, Celeste.
Or request her CD.
We also have some announcements. First thing is we need to announce that the PPS Title VII Indian Education Project has moved. So their new address is 5210 North Kirby Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97217. Okay. And their new phone number, is area code 503-916-6499. Okay. That's the PPS Title VII Indian Education Project. And also we need to let you know that the gillnet fishing period has been extended from October 19th to the 22nd, okay? And just so you know, all of Zone 6 dates from 6 a.m. Tuesday the 19th through 6 p.m. Friday, October 22nd. And there's an 8-inch minimum mesh size restriction. You're allowed to sell Chinook, coho, steelhead, walleye, carp, yellow perch, catfish, bass, and shad can be sold or retained for subsistence. Sturgeon may not be sold. Sturgeon between 43 to 54 inches fork length in Dalles and John Day may be retained for subsistence. Okay? And all the sanctuaries, all standard river mouth and dam sanctuaries shall remain in effect. Okay? So that's until tomorrow. Gill netting has been extended. And please wear your life jackets for safety and avoid overloaded boats. And so any other announcements, Louis?
No, I don't think I have any others.
Dean?
Nope.
Okay.
Yes, we would like to send a shout-out to Red Willow again.
Yes, hello, Red Willow. Hope you're listening.
She is.
Hope you're doing well. And thank you for all you've done and are doing. And we support Indian Country, and we.
So I guess our subject is going to be off the last 2 weeks.
Yes, and but also, you know, for our callers, I think, you know, right?
Right.
We in, to a certain extent, I think we also have open topic. We'd also like to hear what you guys, you folks, would like to talk about, but perhaps to extend our discussions that we've been talking about current issues, political economy, realities of Indian Country, Native spirituality. Various issues that we deal with all the time. They're all open topics, and we'd also like to hear what's on your mind and what you'd like to discuss as well. Mm-hmm. We have a caller? No.
A little about propaganda, too.
Yes, yes.
There's plenty of that, huh?
That's right. So, again, if you could call in, please, area code 503-231-8187. This is KBOO, 90.7 FM Portland Radio. Thank you for listening and for all your contributions. This is Matakue Oyasi. And we're here with you and waiting for your calls or hope you call in. And thank you so much again for all your contributions and your kind words and your thoughts and your call-ins and shout-outs. And it means a lot to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, one thing to get the ball rolling, I'd all urge you all to read book by Roger D. Hodge called The Mendacity of Hope, Barack Obama and the Betrayal of American Liberalism. Very interesting book, I might add. And here's the what Naomi Klein, who wrote, you know, Shock Doctrine, had to say about this book. Quote, ready to wake up from the Obama dream yet? If so, this thrillingly scathing and relentlessly truthful cri de coeur, cry of the heart, is your strong cup of coffee. Hodge skewers the sloppy intellectual culture that willed this political chimera into being while expertly unmasking the corporate machine that is the real brand Obama. Drink up. That's from Naomi Klein. And so lots happening. This book is very well documented, very well written. I think you might find it interesting. And again, we could continue on till we get some calls talking about some of the things we were mentioning before. And of course, one of it has to do with the realities of Indian country.
Well, another book that, since we were talking about Barack Obama, is the Bush Family of Secrets.
Yes, by Russell Baker.
Russell Baker, also an interesting book.
Very, very well researched, extremely well researched book.
And some people might ask, how does this relate to an Indian show?
And how does that?
It's all parallel. Welcome to the reservation.
That's right. That's right. We know all about brownouts on the res. Okay. Yeah. We know about that. We know about dirty water.
Yeah, brown water as well.
That's right. The lead-filled water. Yes, exactly.
We know about those symbiotic relationships.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We're the proverbial canaries in the old mine. And again, it's sad to do that, to bring this to you, that some of these realities, but this is real. We've talked to a lot of people. We've asked people, you know, have you been on an Indian reservation, and what have you seen there? Have you hooked up with people? And one of the things I guess we're trying to do with this medium is to bring some of that reality the best we can to you, because not everybody can get out there, or even if you go to some reses, it'll take some time before people come to trust you and, you know, feel comfortable, because they don't know who you are exactly and what your intentions are. But if you give it a try, I'm sure you'll be in for a big surprise, because if you just come in and act in a decent way like a human being, people will pick up on it and they'll embrace you. Many will, not all, but many will.
Many will.
And will embrace you and talk with you and so on. I think we have a caller.
We have a call.
Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hello, Dave. Dave?
Are you there?
Hi, Dave.
I don't think we have Dave online.
No. Okay.
You know, we just heard a song, and it was entitled How Do I Fly, and it was very beautifully written and beautifully sung, but I look at the root of it, and somebody writing a song with confusion. And perhaps that confusion is just because of this paradigm that we're living in, you know, of that mind, that self-doubt, these things that are happening to our own people, mm-hmm. trained to measure up, trying to find our way. When our ancestors understood who we were, why we were, it was simplistic. But living in that paradigm, we're always trained to measure up. We're always trained to find our way. Mm-hmm. Once again, living in that self-doubt, that fear, mm-hmm. not knowing who we are, how we're connected, how we're related, where our place is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's, and seeking approval outside of ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and the other thing about it is, you know, Einstein, there's two famous quotes from Einstein. One was that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over the same way with the same people and expecting different results. And the second famous quote from Albert Einstein was that you cannot solve a crisis through the same mentality and consciousness that caused it.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with systems. You can't solve the crisis of systems with the very same systems that caused them.
I honestly think, though, we got to get rid of that me, that myself, that I comes from that guilt and sin. You know, always questioning ourselves.
Exactly. Lucas?
Hello?
You're on.
Hi, Lucas.
Hi, my name is Lucas. I was calling to make an announcement.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Right now, I wish I could have got a hold of you last week. Right now, there's a blanket drive and warm clothing drive for Pine Ridge Reservation.
Okay.
And it's happening right now on 34th and Hawthorne.
What organization are you with?
I'm just spreading the word, but it's a friend put this together. I know she said AIM Drum is down there right now, and I think they have a like a nonprofit tax thing for donations accepted.
Uh-huh.
Just for people to have warm clothes and blankets up on Pine Ridge.
Yeah, this is very important because people on the reservation are living in below zero weather.
Right. No heat.
No heat. They have to bring in their own gas, their own water. Last year's storms were terrific. I mean, they were terrible.
Yeah, I've seen over the years the storms that people have died.
Absolutely. So, especially elders.
Do you have a contact number, Lucas?
Just mine right now, 503.
Mm-hmm.
758-7871.
Mm-hmm. And that was 34th and Hawthorne?
Yeah.
Do you have an address there?
34th and Hawthorne.
That's about it.
Right on the corner. It's in the parking lot.
All right.
What are the hours?
It's going on, I think, till 8:30.
Okay. Till 8:30. All right. We'll make some more announcements before the show's over, Lucas.
All right. And if people can't make it there, they can call me.
All right.
Okay. Number, I guess.
Okay, we'll put the number out. Thanks a lot, Lucas.
All right, have a good one.
Okay, thank you. Our next, Jeff?
Hi, Jeff.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Jeff.
How are you?
Ah, Jeff.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call. And thank you for your program.
Thank you, Jeff.
I wanted to mention that your opening musical number reflects the philosophy of Jay Krishnamurti.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that Jim Craven, one of the most important public intellectuals on the West Coast, Jim Craven, is aware of Krishnamurti, who said that, who wrote an interesting feature that was interesting principle, which is the eagle in its flight leaves no mark.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is very different from what has become the prevailing Western Anglo, for lack of a better term, philosophy, which is interestingly taken by African Americans in the form of 50 Cent, who says, get rich or die trying. This is the principle that is sadly being inculcated into our young people, much like you steep a tea bag in the hot water. And the eagle in its flight leaves no mark. Even as a almost 50-year-old artist, I'm thinking, whoa, I need to leave my mark. But Dale, you mentioned simplistic. I think we need to draw a line between that which is simple and that which is simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
It is a gift to be simple, we are told. This is true. Simplicity itself is a valuable thing, but simplicity, when you're simplistic, is when you get Sarah Palin, Christine O'Donnell, and all of these other tea baggers as possible senators in the government of the United States. And let us not be simplistic. Let us be simple, much like the flight of the eagle, who in her flight leaves no mark.
And doesn't fly in flocks.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Right on.
Thanks for listening, Jeff. Dave?
Yeah, hey, can you guys hear me now?
We can.
Yes, Dave.
Killer. All right, so I heard some stuff about something called Americans for Prosperity on the news earlier tonight on KBO News, and I was like, I checked them out, and it was really trippy because it seems like to me, it's, you know, I was looking up what they stood for in their issues, and it was all a bunch of, you know, BS. It was the same usual stuff the corporations push, no taxes for us, no regulations or rules for us. But it was weird because it seemed like they had basically hoodwinked, for lack of a better word, all these really decent-looking people into thinking it was some kind of radical anti-government organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was trippy, and I wanted to share that with you guys.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Great observation.
Thank you so much.
And a shout out to Tuba City. Probably no one listening, but hi anyway.
Thank you, Dave.
My friend.
Next. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. Yes, Jeff. Thank you. Yes, I have read Jiva Krishnamurti, and as a matter of fact, I used to live in India, and I lived in Kerala, and I taught at a 100-year-old Catholic university in a place called Changanesheri, and So the writings of Jitu Krishnamurti are very, very, as a matter of fact, he was from the South. And there's some very, very deep, deep stuff there.
And his point is taken because it is really simple. Mm-hmm. It's being simple. Just mm-hmm. being.
Right. And that's what we mean by that. Yep. Because I agree with what Jeff is saying about being simplistic, mm-hmm. right, means to gloss over the essence of things, you know, to be superficial, basically, right, and to treat, and you're exactly right. But to be simple, you say, you know, it's interesting that in many, many languages, they have the same aphorism, okay? In Chinese, for example, jing di jua, and in Japanese language, inu no kono kawazu takawa shirazu, and so on. In the language where I used to live in Kerala, which is Malayalam, the language is kenatila tabalakunya adalogam. It all means the same thing. For the little frog in the well, the sky is as big as the mouth of the well. And what they mean by that is we all live in the well. We all are ignorant only on different subjects. And an educated person is someone who's crawled out of the well just enough to realize the sky is a whole lot bigger than the mouth of the well, meaning they're more in awe of what they don't know and what they can never know because of the complexity and whatever, just the vastness of things. They're more in awe of what they don't know and can never know than being impressed with what they think they know. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. And that's what that aphorism means.
Along that line, the tea baggers. I think most of the tea baggers, the normal, regular people, have legitimate concern.
Yes.
My concern about them is the Koch brothers are one of the largest financiers of the tea baggers, some of the richest people in the world.
Exactly.
So we have calls.
Yeah, we have a caller. John?
Yeah. Hi, guys.
This
is John. Hi, Portland. Hi, Oregon. The radio's great. Hey, I have a quick question. Your show is fantastic usually when I catch it, but you mentioned maybe visiting a reservation and observe and just visit with people. But the reservation, would I need a passport stamped? And I'm kind of asking that thinking I don't.
No.
Yeah, well, so why not?
Why not?
Whereabouts you live at?
I'm in Portland.
In Portland? Well, you have many reservations around you and up in Washington also. Mm-hmm.
But the Indian nation,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's this distinction of nationhood and land ownership.
Correct.
And that's kind of confusing to me. When I have discussions with others, I disagree sometimes just in land ownership alone. But mm-hmm. Since we do have... Then why doesn't the Indian Nation's reservations require or offer a stamping of a passport? I mean, as a kind of respect in a way.
There are some out east that do, particularly amongst the Iroquois Confederacy, the Six Nations. Uh-huh. There are some that do that. But the main thing is we don't try to make the point that way. We make the point about our national standing in courts and so on.
Right, good.
You see, and we're defined as dependent captive nations.
And I will give you another answer, too, and it's a three-letter word. It's called the BIA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, understand that every reservation, there is a major highway running right through it.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
Okay? So if you start stamping passports at major highways, then the government's going to take control.
Correct. We're going to do that in Blackfoot Country because we have the main road unit that comes through Canada down to Browning, Montana.
Right.
And our reses are on both sides of the border. We have the Blood Reserve at Cardston. We have the Blackfeet at Browning. And we thought of that, actually, because of people coming down to molest children, all kinds of other things, bringing in drugs. So we were going to set up a border crossing.
Right.
Much like what we have to go through on the Canadian and American side for people coming down, you know, to Great Falls to do shopping and all the rest of that. But the problem is we can't afford another wounded knee.
No, well, you know, that's where my mind just went.
There we go.
Yeah. I mean, it's authority that doesn't like to be challenged.
We can't afford to lose any more right now.
Fair. Mm-hmm. Boy, is that a truth. Well, fellas, thanks for the great show. I asked the question honestly.
I know you did.
Childish.
No, no, we didn't take it childishly. It's a serious question you're asking. Very serious question.
Thank you.
Thanks for the great show.
Thank you so much for listening. Our next caller, Joanne.
Hi, Joanne.
Yeah, well, I'm starting to have, I don't know, I'm calling in, and I don't know whether I should. I don't know where to go with this. It's my personal grief and problem with somebody that died recently, and she was a peace activist and against war and things like that. And then I found out she gave her body to research, and I'm so upset because I have realized that, you know, I believe it's not a healthy thing to do to have those people cut your body apart, and I don't think it does. So I don't know whether I guess I'm calling in to get see if anybody there understands where I'm coming from or whatever, or whether there's any support for my grief and anger at her doing that to her body, even though, you know, does anybody have any thinking about that type of thing?
You said those people. Would you expand on that?
Yeah, well, science. She gave it to, you know, OHSU, you know, for research, and I just don't believe in that.
Well,
cutting up a human body, I don't think they... that's disrespectful to the human body. That's what I believe. I don't know if I have any sympathy or support there with you folks, but I just was calling in to see if anybody...
Well, let me ask you a question.
I mean, this is probably not a good idea for me to call in.
Well, let me pose a question to you, just as a thought. if you're very, very sick, do you want to have a good doctor?
Yeah.
Do you want a well-trained doctor?
Yes, but I don't believe that happens.
Do you want a doctor who learned about the human body from a computer and from a book? Or one that actually has dissected a human body and knows what those structures look like up front and very close?
I haven't gone that far.
There you go.
I've come a different way.
Yeah, you have a legitimate argument.
I've come a different way.
Yeah. I mean, I understand what you're saying. And for example, amongst Orthodox Jews and so on, the body is, you know, you're buried with all your parts, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, and so people of faith, there's some people of faith who have a problem with that. But I can understand how somebody would want their remains to be of service to humanity after their death.
Well, yeah, I had believed that for a lot of years until living longer and longer and getting more awareness as to what people and life are like. So I've changed my thinking about that. Well, anyway, thank you for listening to me. And
thank you for calling.
Okay.
And thank you for listening to the show. Do we have another caller? Sean?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, I just had a few quick things. For a $60 membership to KABU, I received the DVD from Michael Moore called Capitalism, A Love Story. And just a quick thing on that. On the special features, there was a small interview with Chris Hedges, and it had a lot of meaning for me. I think, and I thought it might help out some people who might be listening, like if there's any young activists out there or anything, but... one of the things that's really gotten under my skin over the last 20 years is that I always presumed as things got tougher that activism would increase, that more and more people would be interested in politics and so forth. But what Chris Hedges laid out was that actually as things get tougher and tougher, sometimes there's a tendency for people to just party more and more. Mm-hmm. So there's this big disconnection between reality and people's lives, and that actually will increase. So, like, if there's any young people out there wondering, like, gee, what are people doing, you know? I thought that might be helpful for some out there.
But, well, it's part of the algorithm of power. Mm-hmm. You know, Kurt just mentioned about bread and circus. I mean...
In the Romans.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes way back, you see? And there's another issue of... It's the phenomenon of cognitive dissonance. You know, when you have cognition means knowing, right? Dissonance means disharmony, right? Mm-hmm. Imbalance. And when you have a contradiction between facts and belief, or contradiction between facts and emotions slash interest, right? Mm-hmm. Or a contradiction between belief and emotions. It sets up a disharmony, an imbalance that's in need of resolution. You know, the old joke is, what's the definition of a conservative? That's a liberal that's been mugged. Okay? And the definition of a liberal is a conservative that's been outsourced and downsized. It's amazing how when your reality changes, right, it forces, sometimes forces a change in belief systems, but more often than not, what people typically do is they retreat from the facts into the womb, right, or into opiates. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or into worldwide wrestling or mixed sports, martial arts.
Sports, drugs.
Right, or reality TV.
Mm-hmm. Self-healing.
Right, or drugs, exactly, or alcohol, or religion, or some cult. I mean, this is all part of the algorithm of imperial power and control. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the new counterinsurgency manual, the first one update in 30 years, I might add, so we're sending people into counterinsurgency with no update in doctrine, it says clearly that there's a contradiction because counterinsurgency is by definition, by its nature, protracted war, okay? Because you can't have a military solution, it has to be a political solution. But on the other hand, the American people have very short memories and very, very, they want quick results, okay? They want wars launched and finished as quick as instant coffee. And when the body bags start coming home to Podunk, Nebraska, where everybody knows everybody, and when the true costs of war become harder and harder to hide, you see, then the public gets nasty. Okay.
Hey, just a few other really quick things. Jim, as a trained economist, I was curious if you're familiar with any of the work of Richard Wolff. He had a pretty good interview on KBU.
From Amherst.
Capitalism Hits the Fan guy.
Yep. Wolff and Resnick. And he's an expert on income and wealth inequality. He's from University of Massachusetts at Amherst.
Yep.
I'm very familiar with his work. He wrote another one, a great piece of work, by the way, if you're interested, and it's called Marxism and Neoclassical Economics.
Oh, I'm going to have to check that out.
And it shows you, it's very honest, it's very non-polemical, it shows you side by side, right, the difference between the mainstream and the Marxian perspective.
Hey, and one last thing, you know, I'm almost embarrassed to say I was cruising through the local Blockbuster and I came across this movie called The Bader-Meinhof Complex. Boy, you want to talk about having your ears pinned back by a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I knew almost nothing about the Red Army faction in Germany in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I can't recommend that movie highly enough, The Bader-Meinhof Complex.
I'm writing it down right now.
It's a must-see for anybody who's a KBOO listener.
Bader-Meinhof
mm-hmm. Complex.
Right. Okay, I got it.
And they had it at Blockbuster.
I couldn't believe I found it there. You know, it's almost embarrassing to admit, you know. But
we'll check it out.
Okay, guys. Hey, have a good night.
Thank you so much for listening, and thanks so much for your comments. We got another caller? No. Oh. Okay, the lines are clear. Well, again, if
the number is.
The number is.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, right, 503-231-8187. This is KBOO FM, 90.7 FM, Portland. This is Mitakuye Oyasi. My name is Jim Craven. My Blackfoot name is Omahgok Yaipoi. We're here, we're the collective.
Dean Looking Hawk.
Louis Soa.
Great, and thank you so much for calling. Do we have another call, Kurt? No? Okay. No. I thought I saw the green light go on there. But okay. Richard Wolff, by the way, has a new book out. I forget the name of it now. It's a brand new book. He does some wonderful work on wealth and income inequality in the United States, and it's staggering. I mean, here's something for you all to think about. Out of 22 industrialized countries, not all countries, okay, but the 22 major industrialized countries in the world today, the United States is number one in wealth and income inequality. Okay, the United States ranks number one in infants born at low birth weight. It ranks number one in infants born substance addicted, you know, with some kind of, you know, like cocaine and whatever, substance addicted. It is number one in teenage pregnancy, number one in teenage abortion, number one in high school dropout rate, okay, a percentage of the students who don't finish high school. It's number one in suicide. Number one in all forms of violent crime, okay. This is amongst the 22 industrialized countries, okay. We are number one. So we are number one.
Not always good to be number one.
Yeah, there you go. And so it's just like a car. You know, if you're going to buy a car, I mean, you got to take it out and make sure and take it to a mechanic and whatever and make sure, you know, especially if it's a used car, a highly used car, you're going to sort of take it out and check it out and make sure that thing runs. Well, how about systems? If you're going to buy a system, how about taking it for a little spin and checking it out?
You said highly used car. This one's been a highly abused car.
Oh, absolutely. But isn't it interesting how we keep pushing the superiority of the U.S. system all over the world? And with all that wealth, we can't even deliver basic health care, okay, based as a right, not some privilege. It's a right to every citizen, okay? We can't even deliver that. Here we have 44 million people with no health care. We have another 30 million people with very marginal health care at best, okay? We spend 17% of gross domestic product on medical care versus Canada's 9% of GDP. Mm-hmm. And in Canada, every single person is covered under single-payer system. And I'm, by the way, also Canadian, so I can tell you, by the way, the stuff they're telling you here about the Canadian medical system is a lie, okay? I was in Canada before there was national health. I was in Canada after there was national health. I saw it, and it's particularly on the reserves, because what happened was we have also 44,000 people who die each year in the United States directly attributable to lack of health care. In other words, they die from relatively minor situations that could have been caught and prevented and treated if they had had access to health care. These are facts. Do you have another call? Oh, no. Okay. And so, you know, when people keep pushing the system all the time, well, we're number one, you know, we're the beacon of democracy and all the rest of this stuff. Take a look at our reality right here. See, what are we doing? The issue of a system is not how much it has, but what it does with what it has. Mm-hmm. If you have a system that's poor but delivers to everybody, that's a far better system than it's a system with that's rich but delivers only to a few. And that's what we have here. And when I was in India, for example, people told me, they said, you know, the difference between you and us is you people, they meant Americans, use a lot and you produce actually very little, whereas we don't have much, but we produce a lot with what we have.
But we need a system of service, not one of control, not a gift with a hook in it. Mm-hmm. And that's what the health care package is that they're promoting.
Oh, absolutely. Can you imagine ordering us to buy health care? Why not? I mean, you should see that in this book, for example, you know, by Roger D. Hodge, Mendacity of Hope, he goes through the whole thing, the whole lobbying stuff that went. And here, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is right on board with this bill. The AMA supported it. They all say it's a gold mine for them, mm-hmm. This bill that Obama mm-hmm. passed. It's an absolute gold mine for them. And nothing, you know, about the basic right of every human being to health care and to access to health care.
Yeah, it's not a health care bill with their...
No, it's a profits bill.
It has nothing to do with the health
care. No, you're right, it's a profits bill.
Yeah.
You see, and so that's the issue. And what's happening is now people all over, the initial reaction we're seeing now with the Tea Party movement and with the growth of the independents and with people who are just sick and tired of both of the mainstream political parties.
I kind of want to go back to the beginning of the show when we were talking about this beautifully written and sang song, How Do I Fly? And people are going to listen to us and they're going to say, well, what can we do? We can't do anything. We can when we get out of that I, that me, and that myself. For the Indian people out there, our first mandate should be so that the people may live. And if we wake up with that understanding and we understand that, then all our actions will be for the people. Not the self-interest, because that's what they're operating with, their own self-interest. And they have us living in that paradigm of we wake up in the morning, we're thinking of I and me and myself, and we're wondering, how do we fly? How do we make a change? That starts with so that the people may live. Mm-hmm. First mandate when we get up. Mm-hmm. That's what we should be thinking about. Mm-hmm. We think of all the greats in history, and the reason that they become the greats in our minds is because they did things for the people. Think about that one.
Exactly. I know when I was just in China a few months ago, one of the major shifts that people talked to me about that they were very, very concerned about is that the younger generations are not so much idealistic anymore, and that they've gone from a mentality of Wei Rin Min Fu Wu, which means serve the people, to a mentality of Wei Zi Ji Fu Wu, which means serve myself, heart and soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that change in consciousness and mentality was directly a product of what's being exported from here to there.
Mm-hmm.
Let me discuss a little bit what giving to the community is. There's the John and Melinda Gates Foundation, and Jim is smiling. Go ahead.
You go ahead.
Yeah, well, I don't know that I know too much about it, but it's we have very wealthy people doing some good things with some of their wealth, and that's not exactly what we were talking about, I think.
That's not what we're talking about.
No.
Because, again, however well-meaning, and I do hand it to Mr. Gates and Mrs. Gates, in the sense that they're putting their money, and not just putting their money somewhere, but monitoring how it's being used and by whom it's being used and what some of the effects are. Some people think it's just because Mr. Gates is a control freak, but in any case, I can respect that. And they're also putting money into AIDS. They're putting money into fighting sickle cell anemia, putting money into fighting malaria in particular, which is a big killer in the third world. And so I do hand it to them that they're not putting their money in just to a bunch of organizations that will, and the money winds up financing a bunch of big offices and trips to Stockholm to some conference and staying in five-star hotels, which is where a lot of money goes, particularly BIA money, I might add. But the problem is, you see, the problem is the system itself, okay? Capitalism is a system that starts out very progressive. It starts out, especially when it emerges out of feudalism, it starts out offering all sorts of liberties and rights that were unknown under feudalism and slavery and whatever. There's no question about that. It rapidly develops productive forces, you know, creates initiative, unleashes all sorts of creative energies.
It's a system of growth.
Correct. But it reaches a stage where it ripens and gets uglier and uglier and gets imperial and gets expansive and gets this big appetite.
Are you familiar with the Kansas City School Project?
No.
Every time I see the Portland School District trying to pass a levy for schools, I love to send them this. And for those out listening, look up the Kansas City School Project on Google. A judge granted $2 billion to the Kansas City School District. It was an experiment to prove that you can't throw money at a problem, okay? Mm-hmm. And with this $2 billion, they put Olympic-sized swimming pools in all the schools. They built a quarter-scale model of the United Nations building in the parking lot. They hired a taxi company to bring the kids to school. They gave themselves all $100,000 raises, and they were out of money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was just happened like a domino effect.
Right.
And then they said, we don't have any money.
Right.
Nothing went to the children.
Exactly.
So all these changes that we're talking about, you cannot make the changes with money.
Right.
They have to come from within us.
Right on. We have a caller. Dave?
Hey, yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Cool. So I heard you guys say earlier that you were talking about what it takes learning to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some like really practical ideas on that I've been thinking about for a while. And basically, like, long story short, I've come to the conclusion that to liberate ourselves, we really need to get in control of our food source. And, you know, once upon a time, people used to hunt and gather, and small family farms used to even be really common in America, even in Oregon and, like, Milwaukee. You know, there used to be a lot of farms and horses and stuff, and they're not anymore. And companies like ConAgra are consolidating control of the world's food supplies like crazy. I think there's like four big companies that produce 90% of at least America's processed food and stuff. And when those companies have control of our food, they have control of our lives. And a person who has control of their own food doesn't have to go to work for McDonald's or Boeing or Lockheed Martin. They can stay home and paint or learn to heal people. And so I think that to get our freedom back, we really need to start growing food.
You're absolutely correct.
Good point.
And it sounds simplistic, but it's really as easy as that, I think, sometimes too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I think probably the food industry is the next big bubble, maybe.
Monsanto.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Genetically modified foods. There's a big item.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But you know that, and what you're saying there, Dean, I mean, it's really true. Most of the problems that you see today, not only do they not take money to fix, but when you have political will, the will to get rid of corruption in anybody who does it, okay, you actually save money. You actually don't need to throw money at it. What you need to do is clean house internally, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, the great Greek historian Heraclitus, he once said, man's character is his fate. And it's the same with systems. The nature of the system is the fate of the system. You've got exploitative systems that can't sustain, you know, the majority of people, and they tyrannize the majority at the, you know, in order to feed a small, rich minority. Such systems are doomed by their nature. And many of these problems that we see today, they don't, not only do they, more money actually makes them worse. Until you internally clean house and get rid of people who would.
Well, we see this going on in our school system in Portland right now. You know, they were going to hold out for a superintendent for, I think, $80,000.
Right.
And then they brought in that woman from back east for more money than the governor. Mm-hmm. They created an iTax that everybody had to pay this iTax to save the schools. Then they turned around and closed half the schools.
Yeah.
We have a
and
call.
Now they're closing more schools.
We have another caller. Bill.
Yes. I kind of wanted to follow off where the last caller made a comment about owning the capacity for your food. And it made me think about a documentary I watched about the rise of the hobos and why they were seen as a problem for the economy, because they didn't become a part of the system, mm-hmm. because they traveled from place to place and they didn't buy into ownership. And the individuals that attacked them, it wasn't that they were just people who roamed. It was that they weren't a part of the workforce. They weren't paying taxes. They weren't buying into this right. capitalist idea.
Right.
And it was kind of fascinating to me that his idea about owning food created freedom. And buying and not buying into a capitalist idea at some point has to become a part of us. But my second comment is really, I think, this idea that if we are a product of our environment, I think we have to look at how our media is really a part of that, in that we are a product of our media. We mm-hmm. are a product mm-hmm. of our financial system, yep. because it has worked its way into our everyday life with mm-hmm. having to get up to work for food, having to pay rent, having to keep the lights on.
Right.
So I think that at some point, we have to get back to a simplistic idea so that we have time to heal ourselves, so that we have time to not be self-centered and focus on the whole rather than just the one part.
Well, you know, Bill, we read a few programs ago from an internal circular, classified circular from 1923, where they were talking about banning the giveaway, which out here on the coast is referred to as the potlatch, which is a ceremony designed to, basically it's designed to teach people not to be attached to material things, not to be, you know, prisoners of material things, to bind to each other, not to be selfish, et cetera, right? And in that circular, they made the point very clear that they banned these ceremonies because they contained values and a value system that was considered threatening to capitalism. Was considered yeah. threatening to the dominant order. And they made yeah. that quite clear.
Yes, and I think it's very interesting. Well, you guys have a great show. And
thank you so
much. Great night.
And
okay.
thank you for
thank
calling.
You. Thank you for calling, Bill.
And Scott.
Scott?
Yes, hi. Wanted to thank you for taking my call. And I wanted to add to what the previous two callers were saying. Can you hear me there?
We yes. can, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great, great. I think that all of what they're saying is really important because I've noticed a number of people saying that we might have some pretty serious inflation this next year, in particular in the areas of necessity, not so much in terms of assets like cars and houses, but more in the area of food and fuel And it's my feeling that Native peoples can teach us quite a lot about growing our own food, about things like herb crafting to get the medicines we need, and also not being attached to material things quite so much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we wind up, we got a system that tells us to own things in order to enhance our self-esteem, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the things wind up owning us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
This is not by accident. They're creating their own famine. Okay. Mm-hmm. We had Uncle Floyd Hand on here from South Dakota, and he had made a trip down to Colorado to try to put a stop to, they were destroying canned foods right off the shelf before they were even expired. Destroying them. Mm-hmm.
We have a system of money where money is important, so your value as a citizen is, do you pay taxes and do you spend money? And that's how you're valued. If you do not pay taxes or very little and spend very little, you have very little value to the system.
Yeah.
And which is the, probably the most serious problem of capitalism, because it's a money. System.
What's the first question when people meet you? What's the first question they ask you?
What do you do?
What do you do? Right? What's your title? Eh? Mm-hmm. How much do you make? How much power do you have? You know? I mean, that's what it's about. You know, if you're the old singles bar, that's the first question you're going to get before, what's your name? What's your sign? Or do you have any nasty diseases? Okay? What do you do?
Do you have something else for running? Oh, it's gone. Okay. Ah.
Go ahead, guys.
No, that's fine. I just saying that that's how our system values people, and I think we do have a bubble of food and energy, including water, as Kurt mentioned, that are going to be in short supply, and whether that's how much of that is manipulated and how much is real is a little hard to tell.
Well, it's interesting because I mentioned earlier that I believe that it, or I think that it's. Created by them, because, you know, what's one of the Senate bills, 787, I believe that was it, to control the water. Federal government wanted to control the water. Now, recently, they're passing another bill to control the food. So you can't grow your own food in your backyard. You can't sell that food. You can't do these farmers markets. Why would you need such bills to own the water? And that bill was interesting because that basically said the government, it stated flat out that even a prairie pothole, that water belonged to the federal government. Now, why would you need such bills?
Right.
You can't own the stars, the water, the wind, the land, you know.
Here's somebody put a plaque on the table that we're sitting next to here. One does not require many words to speak the truth, from Chief Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is, right? This plaque put there. Wonderful. One does not speak.
Does not need many words to speak the truth.
Words to speak the truth. That's the point. Yep. You know, that's what marketing is about. They use a lot of words to say nothing. Where often the truth requires very few words to say a lot. That's the difference. That's exactly the difference. And we sure thank everybody for listening to the show tonight and for all your contributions and all your help and your call in. We really appreciate it. Means a lot to all of us, and we
enjoy your comments and your perspectives.
And we're getting ready to go out now soon with Tribes.
Tribes by Teddy Redson.
Teddy Redson. And thank you so much. This has been KABU Radio 90.7 FM, Portland. This is Mitakue Oyasi. And we thank you for listening. And good night, and see you next week.